name when making a motion so that it may be captured for the minutes of the meeting. I, Roger Harris, do certify that a quorum of the North Central Texas Workforce Development Board is present, so I will now call the meeting to order. Item number one, public comment. At this time, the public telephone line will be unmuted and members of the public may comment on any item on today's agenda. If you do wish to do so, please announce your name, city of residence, and the agenda item on which you are speaking. Maximum of 3 minutes will be permitted per speaker. At the conclusion of this opportunity, the public telephone line will be muted for the duration of the meeting. Do we have anybody wishing to make a public comment? Okay, hearing none, we'll move to item two, which is the declaration of conflict of interest. Board members must acknowledge all possible conflicts included in this agenda and declare each. Board members must abstain from discussion and voting on each item identified. This process allows the secretary to record your intentions in advance. Please abstain from any items that constitute real or apparent conflicts of interest. Item number three is the consent agenda. These items are basically housekeeping and set for approval on today's agenda. Does any board member wish to remove an item for discussion at this time? The two items are the approval of the minutes of the meeting of the September 22nd, 2020 meeting, and B, unlikely to return eligibility requirements for WIOA dislocated worker policy. Hearing no items that want to be pulled down or nobody wanting to pull any of the items down, I'll entertain a motion for the approval of the consent agenda items.
This is Roland Dow, motion.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
This is Roz. I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing and hearing none, I'll call the consent agenda items approved. Item number four is discussion, consideration, possible action regarding committee updates, the executive committee. I'm going to preface this. I was going to save these comments for earlier, but for the board's benefit, I'll tell you that several years ago, the staff started working on the Quality Texas recognition application and project. Yesterday, I sat in on one of the interviews with the examiners. I have to say, as we were talking before the meeting, for those that got on early and heard the conversation, I have to tell you that the application and the information put forward on this project is absolutely incredible. Great detail on the organization, how we do things, what we do, the structure of Workforce Solutions of North Central Texas. Very impressive. It was very impressive reviewing the detail, listening to the examiner, listening more so to staff responses, and it led me to realize that we have a very sophisticated yet complicated task and objective and group of people that we work with. And now is our opportunity to affect the final stages of our strategic planning effort, in which we brought TIP strategies in. So I'm going to turn the meeting over to them, but keep in mind as a board, this is our golden opportunity to affect how we use the trim tab to change the rudder on the direction that we go. So far to date, I compliment TIP strategies on how they've put all this together and worked with us. And I'll add that I also worked with TIP while I was on the city council here. I have utmost respect and admiration for the work that they've done. And with that, I'll turn it over to Tom or Jacqueline.
Thank you, Roger. Sound check. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we can.
All right. Thank you very much. And also, kudos to the staff, Christina and Annabelle and David and everybody else who's helped us here. to move this along. So, and Jacqueline, of course, Jacqueline is our project manager here, and she did all the fine work here. I feel like I'm a character from broadcast news where I have somebody behind me who does all the work, and then I get up and I'm the pretty face. So I know you guys are muted, so I can't hear all the laughter that's going on right now. So, but let's move right along, Jacqueline. Thank you very much. So we'll talk about the goal and and Christina, you can jump in here. I think there is an action item today to approve the key priority statements. Is that correct?
Yes. Actually, okay. Roger will call for that.
Roger will call for that. Okay. Just wanted to give you guys a heads up. So in case you didn't already know. So go ahead, Jacqueline. So the goal structure, reminder of the vision, mission, and values of the Workforce Board, just a reminder of how these priority statements kind of fit underneath this. This last year, go ahead, Jacqueline. This last year, the board identified three different priorities: childcare, career exploration, and community partnerships. And so as part of the strategic planning process, we brought together the board members to weigh in along with staff and the consulting team on each of these items and what that really means. And so out of that came priority statements. But before I talk about those priority statements, I thought it was important to remind the board that there's actually a structure. So for each of these priority statements, there will be a purpose, a purpose measure, and an action developed underneath each one of these priority statements for childcare, career exploration, and for community partnerships. And the language that was used here, priority statement, is essentially a broad goal, kind of a what's going to support the vision. The purpose is what many of us think of as the strategy. You know, how are we going to carry out that priority statement? And then a purpose measure, what is the objective? How do we measure this? Because it's very important to be able to measure what we do. And the action, what are the specific actions to support the strategy? And so from a process standpoint, at this point, we are at the key priority statement, and that's what you're going to be asked to support today. The next step after this, once you have approved this, the consulting team will work with the staff to build out the actual plan, the purpose or strategies, the measurements, and then the actions. And then at a later date, that once drafted, this would be brought back to the board for approval. So that's the process going forward. So the statements themselves, one for each, and I will read them for the record here. Childcare quality: improving the quality of childcare in the 14 county North Central Texas workforce development area is critical.
Tom, we lost your audio.
I think you muted yourself, Tom. There you go.
Well, a note came up saying that someone had muted me. And so I was just assuming that I was saying the wrong things and somebody got tired of it and just muted me. So likely that. Myself. So Jacqueline, if you don't mind, let's start the whole presentation over. Just kidding. So, the last part of this, the board believes that high quality childcare leads to greater school readiness, long-term educational attainment, and a two-generation economic prosperity. So the second, career exploration, opportunities to broaden career awareness and exploration can better connect youth and adults to in-demand jobs as well as fulfill the needs of employers. The board will support career exploration opportunities that equip workers with the skills and knowledge required for success in a rapidly changing and digitally driven economy. And the last one, achieving ambitious workforce and economic goals will require cross-sector partnerships that create innovative solutions for workers and break down silos between organizations. The board will cultivate partnerships at both strategic and operational levels in order to build awareness of programs, share information, and leverage public and private resources to meet those goals. And so, as I mentioned earlier, the next step, once the board has approved, will be to build out the strategies and actions that would support that. So I'll hand it back to you, Christina or Roger, or however you guys want to do this.
Okay. Christina, do you want to make any comments?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I just wanted to share with the board, thank you so much for your participation in the development of the key priority statements. It's been a long time coming. You know, we started this at the board retreat and then had the deep dives. And again, you know, kudos to you guys for achieving quorums at all of those meetings. Once we had to compress our timeline, I wasn't too hopeful. I thought we were just going to maybe have a task force. So I appreciate that. These were presented to the executive committee last week for review and final input. And so we're happy to be here today with you to hope to get these approved, and we'll start building out the purposes and purpose measures as Tom alluded to.
Excellent. Any other comments or discussion from the board or staff? Okay, hearing none, I will entertain a motion to approve this item and start working on our detail.
Move to approve.
We have a motion from
Aaron. And I'll second that.
We have a motion from Aaron to approve. David Bristol seconds. All in favor say aye or wave your
aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Just to kind of continue on the executive committee, I just wanted to mention that we did the groundbreaking for the Denton Center last week, and I give staff tremendous credit for probably one of the better groundbreakings I've attended. We had excellent turnout, elected officials, both county and the city. Several people from the community, several people from the local chamber. It was very, very well done. I believe that's it under the executive committee. No, I take it back. We've got the Terrell lease. So in our executive committee, we did take action on the Terrell lease, and we did recommend that COG enter into the Terrell lease, but we wanted to provide all the detail to the board and update everybody, kind of information sharing on where we are with the Terrell Workforce Center lease. Randy, are you going to handle this?
I will. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the board. Like what Roger said, we'll go quickly review an amendment to our Terrell workforce lease. Sheree, if we go to the next slide, we'll do a little bit of background. We brought this to the board just a couple years ago. We actually, you'll see, we had a five-year lease that was approved by the board that was ending May 31st, 2024. And this lease is located, our location is in 109 Tejas Drive. It's Suite 300 there in Terrell. And we have some new ownership there. That CS and RF Investments LLC, they just purchased the building within the last 8 or 9 months or so. There was a doctor there in Terrell that owned this previous to their purchase. So they're new landlords there. And it's about 40, well, it's exactly 4,389 square feet. And currently, we're paying $18.30 a square foot on average. I say on average, almost all the space we get now, and it's our brokers educate us a little bit. It's common in commercial real estate now to start at a base rent and graduate around 2% a year. And that's what this one was a 2% graduation. So that's why it's that average of $18.30 there. And it did include a little over $4 a square foot of some tenant improvements that was rolled into that rent as well. So that's where we got that $18.30 average, what we're currently paying there. And just another quick reminder, you've been here, us come to you the last few years, we've been trying to integrate the vocational rehabilitation staff, or we're referring to them as VR staff, within these locations as our leases are coming up for renewal. at this particular location, when we did this a couple years ago in 2019, we had some space adjacent to us that we're going to talk about here in just a minute, but it was take it all or leave it. And VR at the time really didn't want all the space. They wanted a piece of it. The landlord at that time really didn't want to do what they were wanting to do. So we couldn't come to an agreement at this time back in May of 2019 or June of 2019, we brought this to you. So VR was not integrated with this particular location at that time. Sure, if we can go to the next one. So that square footage I was just telling you about, they brought it, the new landlord brought it back to us. It's open again. It's 2,623 square feet. It's literally on the other side of the wall from our current location, right adjacent to us. And this particular time, VR management reviewed it, and they're willing to accept all that space at this time. They weren't a couple years ago, but now they changed their mind. In fact, they didn't want to do a lot to the space. They liked it pretty much as is, with a few changes we'll talk about here in just a second. But the office configuration and everything, they were okay with. So there's been a change of heart there within the VR management after reviewing the space again. Sheree, could we go to the next? So this is what the new landlord's proposing. And again, this one's going to be a little bit different. The proposal is what we're used to seeing. We've got two things going on here, and I'll break them up separately. So first of all, they're proposing to offer us the new space, that 2,600 feet I told you that's adjacent to us. That's suite 700. And VR management want to integrate five or so, give or take, staff within that location. So they're going to provide that space to us for 60 months, beginning the later of February 1st or when it's ready for occupancy. I state it that way because there is a little bit of TI there. We're thinking it can be done by February 1, but obviously, we don't want to start paying rent until it's all ready. So that's why we worded it that way. And for an average rent per square foot of $1,553, again, it's an average. It starts at $15, graduated 2% a year. So that's where we get that average of $1,553. And so the next thing we're trying to do is make our current suite that we currently under contract for, that 4,389 square feet, we're wanting to make it coterminous with the proposed new space. So that one, again, is referred to as Suite 300. That's the 4,389. So we're proposing extending that current lease we're in for 20 months or approximately 20 months to make it coterminous with the proposed new space. Again, I say approximately. We don't know exactly when the new one's going to start. We think it's going to be around February 1st. But again, we want to make it whenever it starts is what we would extend the 20 month, the date of which we extend the 20 months. So it would be an average of 1713 a square foot. Again, we're taking where we are now, graduating at 2% for the balance of the 20 months. So that's where we're getting that average. And when you combine both together, we would go from 4,389 square feet currently to a proposed 7,012 feet when you add the 2,600 to it. And then when you combine the two rates, it would be an average of $1,653 per square foot. And that's a triple net. It's excluding taxes, insurance, you know, common area maintenance, janitorial, all those type of things. So Sheree, could we go to the next slide? So here are the tenant improvements we were talking about on the new space. So for that price, we ask them and they agreed to do it, to construct a cased opening between the two locations, just essentially cutting a doorway out between the two suites, build a janitor closet within the new location, replace all the lighting in there, and then replace paint and carpet. So as far as tenant improvements go, it's pretty light. I mean, that's essentially accepting it as is with a few minor changes. Typically, we go in and gut the whole thing and start from scratch. So there's not a lot of tenant improvements to be completed at the proposed new location. So again, we do what we always do. Our broker, Avis and Young, we ask them to go out and get a market survey of the area to make sure we're within market. They did this with this particular area. There's not a lot out there to select from in our square footage range. In fact, you can see we're looking for 7,000. Really couldn't find anything right in that wheelhouse, but we got some other things fairly close, at least get similar type buildings. And you can see that rate there, that in yellow, 1687. What that is, 1687 represents the first year of the proposed new lease agreement compared to the other first year agreement. So you can see we're well within market there. The one that's a little bit cheaper than ours, again, didn't have the square footage available and also didn't appear to offer any tenant improvements. So we feel like it's still well within market, and we feel comfortable with the price there. So again, I typically do this. I want to just summarize some of the reasons we like this location. We've been there quite a while now. We've been in this particular location for about 18 years. So it's just about a mile off I-20 there in Terrell. Got good parking. Normally about 4 car parks per 1,000 feet is about the best you're going to get at most commercial. This one's over 5. So we're pleased with parking. And then again, that 7,000 square feet should be sufficient to accommodate not only our current floor plan, but the addition of the 5 VR staff there. So this is what the recommendation appears. This is the way the recommendation appears. So we're actually, I broke it up into the different phases like I did within the presentation. So we're asking the Council of Governments to enter to an at least amendment is we're adding them to asking them to add the additional 2,623 feet we talked about, that sweet 700, for 5 years beginning the later of February 1 or at such time the space is ready for occupancy. At the same time, we're also asking to extend our current lease for the suite 300 for the 4,389 feet for a period of approximately 20 months to make it coterminous with the new suite 700. The combined square footage, which is 7,012, is to be proposed an average rate not to exceed 1,653 per square foot. And again, that is a triple net lease, meaning it does exclude taxes, insurance, common area maintenance, utilities, and janitorial. So I will be happy to entertain any questions you have at this time.
Have any questions or discussion? Okay. I've been corrected. We did not take action on the executive committee other than to recommend that that COG enter into this lease. So I am going to call for a vote. I'm going to consider this a motion that the executive committee made, or I on behalf of the executive committee, and I'm going to call for a second and then a vote. Do I have a second on this motion?
I'll make a second.
And who is that?
This is Bill King. I second.
Thank you, Bill. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Moving on to the Workforce Development Committee. Jason Gomez, do you want to preface this?
Yes. Good morning, everyone. The Workforce Development Committee met on October 27th. We covered the approval of the minutes from our previous meeting, which was August 25th. In addition to that, we covered a recommendation for board policy. It was on unlikely to return eligibility requirements for the WIOA dislocated workers. This policy was approved by the WD committee. And just a little while ago, the board approved it in the consent items that we covered this morning. In addition to that, Maureen Armstrong and Ms. Bex gave us an update on the Texas Rising Star program. And I believe that Morgan is going to give us an update to the entire board on the Rising Star program with some changes that are happening. And this is very relevant to us as this is one of our, you know, improving child care quality is one of our objectives and goals for the board. So Morgan, if you're ready, you can start at any time.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I'm Morgan Armstrong, Child Care Quality Program Supervisor. Just giving you guys an update on what is going on with the Texas Rising Star Program. Move on to the next slide. So just briefly, just going over what the Texas Rising Star Program is. It is the quality rating improvement system for the state of Texas. So it does evaluate the level of care and education from our child care programs. And it rates them as a 2-star, a 3-star, or a 4-star provider. This is a voluntary program, so providers have the option to apply to be in the program at any time if they qualify, and they can also leave the program at any time for whatever reason. There are tiered reimbursement rates attached to the star level. So 2-star, 3-star, 4-star, they get a higher reimbursement rate based on their star level. And so these rates go towards the children that they have in care that are in the child care subsidy program. So that's an added benefit of being in the program, is that you're getting a high reimbursement rate. But also, go back Cherie. but also just a reminder that 2% of the funding that we get for child care goes towards our quality initiative. So whatever we do goes in support of our TRS program and other quality activities, like things for our mentors or for scholarships, for, you know, professional development or education, or grants for materials or equipment for our child care providers, whatever they need to help improve the quality of care for in at their center. So there are standards for getting into the program. Providers do have to meet a certain level of eligibility in order to apply. And these mostly focus around meeting certain minimum licensing standards with child care licensing, and also making sure that they're not on corrective action with child care licensing or with TWC. And so once they meet those eligibility requirements, they can apply. So there are application materials, and our staff are available to help providers fill out those application materials. And so once they turn that in, they are assessed to be in the program. So they have to go through a full assessment, and then they go through a monitor visit annually. The assessment helps to determine their star rating when they're in the program. And the annual monitor just makes sure that it doesn't affect their star rating, but it just makes sure that they are still in compliance with those TRS standards. So the person just goes out and makes sure that they are still following the guidelines. But then they're also assessed every 3 years as well to make sure that they are to get a new star rating or to maintain their current star rating. And so the five things that we look at when we do an assessment are director, staff, qualifications and training. So we are looking at to make sure, look at the education level of the administration and the staff members there. Also making sure that they have the training hours that they need. And also TRS requires more training hours than child care licensing does to be in the program, but also making sure that those trainings that they have are appropriate for the program, or the training they have is appropriate for what they're doing. We have teacher-child interactions that we look at. This is the most important part, because quality does depend on making sure that you have positive interactions with the children in your care, and that those interactions are intentional as well. We look at curriculum, making sure that you have activities planned while those children are in your care, and they are intentional, and that they do have some educational benefit as well. We also look at nutrition and indoor-outdoor activities or environments, just looking at your basic nutrition, your nutrition program, and making sure that your indoor and outdoor environments are also set up in a way that's going to be educational and intentional. And then parent education and involvement, just making sure, you know, that your parents are aware of your policies, whatever you're doing in your program, and that you have a way to keep them involved in your program. And so every 4 years, TWC is mandated to look at the TRS guidelines and the TRS assessment tool and review them and make sure and see if there's any changes that need to be made. And right now we are under our first review, and also they have proposed some changes, and those changes are up for public comment right now, up through the 23rd. And just to let you know where we stand, it says 97 right here, but right now we are at 98 TRS programs. So we have 22 star programs, 23 three star, and 55 four star. And I might actually be wrong on that. We might have more than that. We are definitely growing, and we have some more scheduled to come in before the month is over. So just know that we are definitely higher than 97 right now from when this presentation was made. All right, so some of the proposed changes for the TRS program. They are proposing that there be a pre-star requirement. So remember I said there is a two-star, three-star, and four-star. Well, they are proposing that there be a pre-star requirement. And what this does is providers have to, all providers that are have a contract with us to accept children in the child care subsidy program, that they be screened to make sure that, you know, that they haven't been cited for certain, for very specific child care licensing standards. And so if they pass this screening, then they're given a pre-star requirement, meaning that they are eligible to be in the TRS program. The goal is, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to all be TRS by a certain time. No, it just means that you're eligible to be in the TRS program, and so you'll be given a pre-star designation. The goal for TWC is a five-year goal to have all of our CCS providers meet the pre-star requirement. So that's something important to note. It solidifies the standard of care that we plan to offer for our children that are in the child care subsidy program or child care services program, because at least says that, hey, our providers, whether they're in the TRS program or not, they are meeting certain licensing standards, and they haven't been cited for specific ones. Another thing is we have the TechPass Workforce Registry. This is not something that is new. This Workforce Registry has been around for a while, but what TWC is proposing is that it be a requirement for our TRS providers to be on the Workforce Registry. And this is just a place for administrators and teachers and caregivers to house their education levels, you know, their degrees, their credentials, certificates, their training certificates, training hours, and things like that on there, with the goal of us being able to tap into the registry and use it to score Category 1. It'll kind of make the system paperless. Right now, it is the bulk of our paperwork to collect all of that materials for scoring for the TRS program, so we can have all of our TRS providers tap into the Workforce Registry, and we can use that to score. It'll be beneficial in a paperless fashion. The streamlining of scored measures. One of the major changes is we have 5 categories that we score. One of the major changes is that they're reducing it to 4. So they're taking out Category 3, which is curriculum, and they're actually kind of integrating it into Category 2 for caregiver-child interactions, so they still have to do lesson plans and things like that, but they're going to make it be more connected with those caregiver-child interactions, making sure that what you have planned is actually, you know, what you're doing in the classroom and things like that. And they changed a lot of the wording within the tool to make it more consistent, easier to understand. So those are the major changes that are going on with the score measures. Oh, and they also changed it to where Category 2 for caregiver-child interactions is going to have the most weight out of the 4 categories. So it's going to be weighted at 50%. So 40% of your score is actually going to be based off of those interactions in the classrooms, which will be a good thing, because that is the most important part. Assessor certification. So another of the proposed changes is that they are requiring any person that does assessments for the TRS program actually be certified, have a certification in order to assess a program. And so they have a whole program rolled out that they plan on rolling out the beginning of next year. And this is going to increase the reliability and validity of the program itself, just making sure that if a program is assessed by 2 different assessors, they will get the same score. That has been an issue over the past few years. And so having this certification is going to be a positive thing as well. Mentor micro-credential, this will be rolling out at the beginning of next year as well. So our mentors will be going through a program. Mentors are the people that support our child care programs that are either in the TRS program or are trying to get in the TRS program, just making sure that they have the resources that they need to stay current with the guidelines and that they're meeting their goals within the program. And so there's actually going to be a micro credential that our mentors can earn. And there's going to be badges that they earn in order, you know, throughout the whole program for, as they obtain this micro credential. And then the goal is, once all of this is solidified in writing and everyone has been trained on the new tool and the new guidelines, that TWC is going to put a statewide campaign to make sure, you know, that not only childcare programs know about the TRS program, but also that parents know about the TRS program, what the difference is between TRS, or what's quality, what's not quality. I'm not sure exactly what all talking points they plan to touch on, but there will be a campaign to help promote the TRS program over scheduled for next summer. And that's all I have for that. And I'll entertain any questions you have.
Morgan, first of all, do we have any questions or discussion from the board?
Roger, this is Kenny. I had just one quick question. It was great presentation and great summary. You had a number, it was just under 100 of providers that were getting a star rating. Do you have a sense of what percentage of total providers that is?
We are required to report that quarterly to TWC, and it's around 15%, 15 or 16% is what our current number of TRS providers are.
Is there a goal to increase that?
Absolutely.
That's a pretty low number.
Absolutely. It's actually was a part of our strategic plan for and we didn't quite meet it. We had a plan to have 120 by, you know, the end of our last fiscal year, but we didn't quite meet it. And COVID did impact that quite significantly because we haven't been able to go out and do, you know, assessments really. So that we didn't quite meet our goal, but we are almost at 100. So when we get over that 100 mark, there's going to be a huge celebration from our staff.
Morgan, you had mentioned in 5 years a goal. Were you saying 100% participation, or were you referring to something different?
In 5 years, TWC is, the goal is for TWC to have, for all of our providers that accept children in the CCS program, that all of them meet the pre-star designation.
Okay, the pre-star. Okay. Thank you, Morgan. Is there any other questions for Morgan regarding the Texas Rising Star program? Yep, Roger, sorry.
I have one. Morgan, what is the biggest barrier to entry into the TRSA program? Is it financial or what?
There are some misconceptions about the program. And some providers also just, they think that it's a lot of work just to get into the program or to stay in the program. And so some of the greatest barriers are just clearing up those misconceptions about the whole application process. I mean, it is quite a bit of paperwork that you have to gather, but we do have staff that help guide you along that process the entire way so that you aren't doing it alone. But then also just, you know, being in the program, some providers really, they just don't want to do all the necessary requirements that it takes to be in the program.
Understand. Any other questions or discussion?
You know, I guess one of my last thoughts, Roger, and I don't have anything else for the WD committee, but since childcare quality is now one of our key priority as a board, and Texas Rising Star is meant by its very nature to increase childcare quality. And right now we're at about approximately 15% participation. I think that's something in the future that we begin to dive a little deeper into, to address whatever the barriers are and to increase it. I know that, you know, where I came from for many years was in Terrell, and one of our biggest concerns were childcare quality. And to be honest, I do think it prohibited some of our economic growth in Terrell, not having great childcare quality providers. So I think that is something that maybe, whether it's a board or different committees, that we begin to just begin to have more discussion on on how to raise that number, setting those goals and tracking that a little more closely.
Yeah. Can I make one final comment on that?
Sure. Yes, ma'am.
The pre-star designation is going to be very helpful because it will help us identify which providers are eligible to be TRS providers. So that'll be a great thing to know. As far as outreach, we do have an outreach specialist that goes out and helps bring those providers in. Once or if that pre-start designation comes into fruition, that'll be very helpful in helping us get our numbers up.
Excellent.
Roger, can I Roger, add one?
I've got a question for Morgan.
Can I add one?
We have two people. Kelly, go ahead.
Just, I think what's going to be really important is the message that TWC sends out when they do their statewide campaign. I think if parents understand what quality really is, they're going to demand it. So that means that providers are going to actually have to step up to the plate, become a TRS program, because I think parents will finally understand, this will benefit my child in this way and prepare them for kindergarten. So I think TWC, it's only taken them 20 years, 30 years. I mean, the program's been around since the 90s. So I think just, educating parents is going to help our mission.
Totally agree. Usually when you have market forces that demand it, you're far better than somebody else mandating. Yeah. Okay, I thought I heard somebody else try to get a question in. Was there somebody else that had a point?
Roger, that was Mickey.
Go ahead.
Morgan, that I recall years ago that grandparents used to be can certify as the provider. Is that still happening?
I'll answer that for you, Mickey. Grandparents are still eligible child care providers.
So what's the percentage of that?
They're not, because most of them are not licensed or registered, they are not eligible for the Texas Rise and Star program.
Okay, but what percentage of that is their total number of providers?
Oh, to tell you the truth, I don't have that number, but I can certainly, when we send out the child care slides, I'll get that number.
I was only bringing that up because I'm kind of like Kenny. I thought the 97 is 15% was a low number, but if we've got an awful lot of those grandparents out there, that's the reason I was asking.
Interesting point. Okay, anything else on workforce development or the Texas Rising Star update?
No, we're good.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason. And thank you, Morgan. Excellent job on the presentation. Okay, we'll move to the Oversight and Accountability Committee. Carlton Tidwell, do you want to preface this?
I don't believe Carlton's with us today, but Randy and Michael are prepared to move through those presentation points.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. I guess we'll get right into it. Next slide, Cherie. Now, according to the final release of the August 2020 monthly performance report, we met or exceeded performance within all of our formally contracted measures, as you can see. With the positive performance status, as you can see, we have 3 measures and we have 11 measures at the meeting performance status. Next slide, Cherie. Now, this category is our reemployment and employer engagement measures, which we commonly refer to as our RE measures. As usual, TWC, they're not providing performance data for our claimant population and our EWA employer population for the remainder of the performance period. Therefore, we have nothing to add to this category within this presentation. Next slide, Cherie. Now, our next category is our program participation measures. Now, due to the impact of COVID, the Choices Performance Measure was suspended for the remainder of the performance year. Now, TWC is contemplating utilizing our February 2020 performance as the year-end marker for choices. Now, if we go back 12 months, starting in February, ending in February 2020, we will end the year performing at about 98.12% of target, which is designated as a meeting performance status. Now, if TWC utilized the February 2020 year-end performance data as the year-end marker, we will end the year at 95.10% of target. Either way, we will be ending the year at a meeting performance status with the choices performance measure. Now, the next measure in this category is our child care measure, our average number of children served per day. Now, through the month of August, as you can see, we served an average of 7,290 children per day, which is about 95.5% of target and slightly above that 95% threshold for meeting performance status. Therefore, we met the measure for the month of August. However, for the year-end numbers, the year-end report, which is our September 2020 report, we're showing that we will fall slightly below that 95% threshold, which will result in us being at a negative performance status. Actually, we will end the year at about 94.27% of target, once again, slightly below that 95% threshold. However, TWC understands the nature of COVID's impact on our performance and the impact of halting our enrollments into the child care program. Now, we just could not replace those kids or those children that we lost to attrition. Next slide, Cherie. And here are our WIOA outcome measures. We have 13 measures here. And as you can see, we're meeting our surpassing performance within all 13 formally contracted measures within this category for which we have available data. In the next two slides, Cherie. Let's go to our performance ranking. Yes. So here's the last slide that I usually provide in my presentation. Here we have our ranking data. Now, according to the August 2020 monthly performance report, we're ranked 16th of 28 boards and 3rd of 7 large boards with an average rank of 15.36 per formally contracted measure. Now, as usual, this concludes my brief presentation, and I'll take any questions if you have any.
I have just a quick question on the slide 2 before the end there. And it goes to the, there you go, right there, median earnings quarter 2 post-exit. Are those, how are you, is that a self-reported number? Where, or where are we getting and what is it?
Meeting and
earnings. Supposed to be, I guess.
Yes, meeting and earnings is reported by TWC. One of the issues that we had with our meeting and earnings performance measure, first things first, TWC did not provide a target for the meeting and earnings measure for the dislocated worker population, and I think the adult population also. This is something that we did not have a target for the last 2 years, but for the upcoming year, the current year that we're in now, BCY21, we will have a target. Now, the data comes from various databases that TWC has access to identify an individual earnings within the second quarter after they exit the program. Now, we have access to performance extracts. However, TWC does not provide us with meeting and earning wages for individuals outside of the state. One of the things that we notice is that we have a significant amount of our participants that are going out of the state to ascertain employment. And that's why we rely heavily on TWC to provide us this outcome data. If we try to generate the data ourselves, we will be significantly off with the outcomes.
Okay, Michael, is that then why under the denominator there, as opposed to the 228 employed, it says we were only able to measure the 170? Is that the reason for that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were referring to the median earnings.
No, I am. But if you look at the median earnings in the denominator of that, there's only 170 people versus you said above that you had 228 employed quarter two post exit. So that I'm asking, where is the additional 58 people?
Yes. With these performance measures, we have different parameter periods, meaning you're looking at a different exit period. So we looking at individuals exiting during a certain period of time, the individuals that fall into the denominator. That's why it's a difference. You're not looking at the same population of individuals.
And what will be the current fiscal year target for median earnings?
As of this moment, we do not have a target. We are actually waiting for TWC to provide us the official targets for BCY 21. We actually went through a target negotiation process a few weeks ago. We submitted some alternative targets, and we're waiting on TWC's response to our proposed targets right now.
Thank you.
Any other questions or discussion? Okay, Michael, thank you very much. Great presentation.
You're welcome.
Next, we will have Randy Richardson provide the financial update. You're muted, Randy.
All right. Thank you for that. Once again, good morning, everyone. What I'd like to do is quickly go through our August 2020 cumulative expenditure report for not only the board, but our major subrecipient, which is Equus. We are just finishing up our final expenditures for 2020 right now, setting our final indirect and fringe rates and final expenditures and all those things. So we should have a final report to you on your next board meeting. But again, these are representative through August, and we might take a peek into preliminary September on a few of these. So Sharif, we can go ahead and get started. For the workforce board, the staff and centralized functions, just a quick reminder, I say this each time just to make sure we're all on the same page. Our fiscal year is October 1, 19 through September 30th, 2020. And the budget for FY 2020 was $14,201,450. Again, that was approved by the board. And expenditures through August are approximately 6.5% behind target for that month, or a little over $900,000. So let's go ahead and go to the next slide. So I always try to update you on our staffing. That's one of the major cost categories of our budget. And I say the personnel cost for the staff, that does include salaries, fringe, and indirect. We refer to that as a fully loaded personnel cost. It's about $7.5 million for the budget. Expenditures through August were about 5.2%, or almost $400,000 behind target for August. And the next slide, we'll see one of the major contributors is some of our attrition. You can see we have had about 41 months of attrition throughout the year. We do still have three unfilled positions. You'll see towards the bottom, the senior early childhood specialist and two business development liaisons. Both of those, or all three of those positions, do have significant in-region travel built in with their job description. So it has been a little bit of a delay in filling those, simply due to it's just we've kind of been on a stand down mode here for a while. So anyway, we're hoping to get those filled here early in FY 2021. So also, again, I remind you each time we do fund two fiscal monitors that are employed by the COG administration to they do different things, but mainly they monitor our subrecipient Equus. And so they've also had some staff attrition, so they were also behind about 19% compared to their August targets. And I brought this note from last time as well, just to remind you that you did see some of the early childhood specialists that were open. The positions had some attrition during the year, but we did use some of those funds to go and redirect them, some of the savings, and redirect them to move the Kelly Fontenot staff. There are about 13 of them. Down to the first floor of the building they're located in, and we have a new suite for the child care staff down there. So we did use some of those savings for some of the relocation costs, things you would imagine, movers, cabling, supplies, materials, that sort of thing. So we were able to redirect those savings elsewhere. So the travel and staff development, I put those together. They typically go together. Staff development does typically include a little bit of travel. So again, I brought this in forward from last time as well. The budget was $489,000 for those two budget categories. We're behind about 63% or $308,000. And again, the majority of this is due to the COVID situation. We were put on a no travel ban was put in place back in April of 2020. So nobody has been able to travel now for about 7 months, and that's not going to change any. So we're going to end the year there. It's going to trend even more. It'll probably be about 320 or so behind target on that as we go through the year. That's not going to be corrected. This is a new one. I don't know if I've talked, it's in the budget, but I don't know if I've ever really brought it out on the expense report, but I refer to it as workforce center infrastructure. A couple years ago, I brought all the budget for our workforce centers, the infrastructure, into the workforce board's budget from our subrecipient's budget. And we did that for various reasons. But when I talk about infrastructure, I'm talking about the things like rent, utilities, copier, maintenance, telephone, security, those type things for our workforce centers. And just to remind you, we do have 12 workforce centers. So the expenditures through August, they were, the number's not high. It's about 5%, but because it is a large budget, it's still almost $100,000. And those are things we do estimate some things. Some things we have a pretty good grip on that we have leases, like our leases. We just talked to you about the Terrell lease. So we have actual real estate leases there, and we know what the cost on those are. But other things, we're looking at averages and history and things like that, things like utilities, some of our telephone costs, postage usage, things like that. We are estimating maintenance costs. We are estimating. So we are a little bit behind on those categories through August, which equated to almost $100,000. Leasehold improvements, I try to keep you updated on this. This is typically in a special projects category. Excuse me. That whole $150,000 was dedicated to our relocation of our McKinney Workforce Center. And we were back in there in January of, we moved down the road a little bit and we're in a new center. It was constructed and ready, and it's actually a beautiful center down there we've got. So we moved in around the 1st of January, 2020, and we're just about on target on that. We've expended those funds. So quickly, I'll go to a workforce center subrecipient. Again, Equus is formerly known as ResCare. So they're referred to as Equus now. Their corporate structure's changed some. And again, just a reminder, their budget year is the same as ours. I say their contract with us is the same year as ours, the board's, October 1 through September 30th. As of August, their budget was $82.7 million. We did give them a couple million dollar bump here at the end of the year for additional COVID money, but as of August, it's about 82.7, and they're about 9.3% or 7.7 million behind target as of August. Story hadn't changed too much on this as far as the primary grants that were contributed to this expenditure level. Child care is the first one. So I break these out between, I'm just calling it normal child care or at risk. And that's what I mean is that's the ongoing 2-week payments we're making to our child care centers out in our region. And I disseminate between that and our COVID money just so we can get a better idea what's going on. So our normal child care at risk expenditures are about 1.6% or 750,000 behind targets. I took a peek at September. We're still trickling in on invoices, but we're going to actually get less than 1%. We're going to get even closer to target. So they ended the year under 1% within target. So we're probably the closest we've been to target many years. So we're not going to have a substantial carryover as in previous years. And like Michael said in his presentation, our goal for the year for average kids served was 7,633 kids. We were at 7,290 through August, which is 95.5. But also, like he said, because TWC, I'll try to make this just a Cliff Notes version, but they typically parents have to pay a portion of their child care, then we pick up the rest. And we refer to that simply as parent shared cost. So a few months ago, due to COVID, TWC instructed us to just pay everything, and the parents didn't have to pay their parent share for several months. And so because of that, obviously, we're spending at a higher rate than anticipated to make sure that we didn't go over our allotted funds. TWC told us just to shut down any enrollment of any new kids. And so because of that, Michael alluded to, our number served is just trickling down over the month. So as of September, we won't be at the 95%, which is considered meeting. We'll be right below that. But again, that was a little bit out of our hands. So we were on target to be meeting that prior to COVID. Again, I talked to you a little bit about the COVID money and child care. We have, through August, we had $16.1 million, and we used it for various things. They defined, TWC defined what essential workers were, and we enrolled the essential workers, children within care with this money. We also, like I mentioned earlier, paid parent share of costs for several months. And this one right here, this 25%, I've talked to you a little bit about in previous months, but this is the only part or the only aspect of the child care COVID that's continuing on. And right now it's supposed to go through December. The others have we've ended those particular costs or expenditures, but the 25%, and all that means is for a child care center that's remained open through the COVID, they get a 25% supplement over and above their bi-weekly payment. And so that's the expenditures you're going to keep seeing for the next several months. That's what it is. That's the only COVID-related child care that we're currently projecting unless things change. Again, I mentioned earlier, we got an additional $3 million, $3.2 million here at the end of the year. So we will be allocating most all of that is related to that 25%. So we will continue to be spending on that for a while. Sheree, can we scroll down at all at the bottom, or is that the bottom of the... That's okay.
That is. It might be the bar that you have on your screen.
That's all right. So as of August, I think I can see it here. We spent for COVID money. I told you we had through August, we had $16 million allotted to us. We'd spent about $9 million through August. So when I say we're 4.4 million behind target, TWC really didn't give us a target. I just used a straight line method through there just to give you some kind of benchmark. We're not going to spend all that because, again, the only thing we're continuing to spend is the 25% supplement. The money they gave us for the other aspects of COVID, the parent share, the essential worker, all those others, we'll just give that money back. They won't let us redirect it to other normal child care. So we'll give it back when the contract's over. But the 25% is ongoing. All right, last slide. WOA, that's our second largest of our funding sources. Just to remind you, we have three grants within that, the adult, the dislocated, and youth. And we do a lot with these grants, but this is our primary training grant. So I've mentioned the last couple months, we do most of all the customer training with these funds. And what I mean is, if they qualify, we can send them traditional colleges, vocational schools, truck driving schools, those type of training. And as you can imagine with the COVID situation, most of those schools shut down at least temporarily. And so our expenditures lagged. It turned out we did take about a 14% cut in our new money starting in 21. So we will have carryover money because of that to help kind of buffer some of the cuts going into the new year. So we were able to redirect these unspent funds in 20 to carry over in 21 and help reduce some of the impact of that cut. So most all the colleges and schools are at least offering an online or some kind of virtual training. A lot of them have came back in person as well, at least for now. Not sure where this is going. But so anyway, for the rest of the year here, you're not going to see these expenditures get better through September. They're going to trend negative at least through this year. And depending on the COVID situation, hopefully the city start reversing in FY21. So that is what I have for you at this time. I'll be happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
We have any questions or discussion? Okay, excellent job, Randy. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is UI work search requirements. David Setzer.
All righty. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. So I just wanted to recap for you kind of the journey we've been on in terms of UI work search requirements. Just to refresh the board's memory, early in the pandemic, as the unemployment rate was skyrocketing and people were being laid off and either temporarily or permanently, the state decided to suspend job search requirements. It just didn't make any sense with all the COVID activities going on, and so that was suspended. And it was reinstated through the summer. These were topics of discussion at the state level. When should it be reinstated? What should it be reinstated at? So I want to say it's late July, early August. They targeted November the 1st as the date for the reinstatement of UI work search requirements at three work search requirements. And just a reminder, so anybody that's on is drawing UI benefits has to continue to job search. So these job search activities, it's set at three per week, and it can be many different things. You could be applying for jobs online, having an interview counts, coming to a workforce center if one is open, But virtually, we've been serving our clients, although we didn't have the physical means to serve them, but virtually we've been serving them. So we've been assisting these UI claimants, even though the job search requirements have not been there, to continue receiving the benefit. So what happened as we approached November the 1st, TWC did move to reinstate this job search requirement. But the caveat was they realized that local board situations might not be quite ready for the reinstatement of it. So they allowed local boards to make a decision and set that between 0 and 3. So we had been at 0 for a while. The state reset it at 3, but they allowed boards to remain at 0 if they so choose. For us in the Metroplex, we thought it was important to model what Talis and Tarrant were doing, because it would create some initial confusion. You go here, it's 0. You go here, it's 3. So we are evaluating that as we speak. And toward the end of this month, we will be making a decision on whether to remain at 0, to go up 1 to 1, 2, or 3. We don't have a great methodology for figuring that out, but we're looking at several different factors. So we will keep the board apprised of what is going to be going on with the UI work search requirements. So let me stop there and see if there's any questions on that. All right. I hear none. So I'll move. Yes, go ahead.
This is not a question. This is kind of a statement. And this is out in the rural area. This is Mickey. In my last pay period in December, or from my Wendy's, I had 25 employees. Right now I'm running that store with 15 employees. We can't get people in.
Okay.
So, I mean, you look at things. I mean, that's – so anyway.
Yeah, and remember, our policy that the board approved set our job search requirement at 2 above whatever the state sets. So before COVID and everything hit, we were actually at 5, and I think we'll get back there. It's just a matter of the timing of that. So, again, we're going to be looking at that for the rest of the month, at the data that we have to look at, and we'll be probably call the executive committee together to make a recommendation on that, maybe in early December. All right. You ready for me to move to the executive director's report, Roger?
Yes, sir, if you would.
All righty. So, I we've been, of course, providing the COVID updates to all of our stakeholder groups, and they haven't been as frequent because there hasn't been anything new to report. But the main thing I wanted to apprise the board of is that we are beginning to see events that affect our workforce center. We saw some earlier in the year in places like Granbury and Greenville that were, you know, tertiary exposure and things like that. I think right now we have 3 centers that are affected. Weatherford has been on lockdown, everybody working remotely. They're coming back on the 23rd. Of course, remember, we are still serving our customers virtually. We just don't have any physical presence in the center. Plano has had some recent activity, as has Waxahachie. And what we're seeing from the state is, we saw this at Waxahachie, they are taking a very conservative approach with the state employees that are in that center. The exposure was tertiary, but they required their ES staff to go to the house and self-quarantine for 14 days. So that really kind of decimated the staff available to run the center. So we have basically gone remote again on Waxahachie. Plano also, we had a primary contact. We actually had a staff member that tested positive. So they are also remote. But that's only about half our centers. We've got half Stephenville, Terrell, McKinney, Alliance, Corsicana, and Cleburne that, cross your fingers, we haven't had any significant events there. So they are still seeing clients on an appointment basis. That's kind of where we are on COVID. Any questions? If not, we're going to move to...
David, I'm sorry, this is Kenny. I got one question. Could you clarify what you mean by tertiary contact that would shut down a center? What does tertiary mean?
Okay, so let me describe what happened at Waxahachie. So somebody came in, a staff member reported that they had been in contact with somebody that had been in a primary contact. So like you and I were together and I came down with COVID. You haven't been tested positive, but you then were in contact with somebody else. And that other person it's a tertiary. And the CDC guidelines are now, you know, there's proximity and time that comes together to create that first level. So that's kind of what a tertiary is.
All right. Were any of those folks tested, or was this just precautionary with no testing?
It's precautionary with no testing. It's quarantine and looking for symptoms. Of course, if individuals want to go get tested, they certainly can, but we don't require it.
And that incident shut down the whole center?
It did.
State guidelines, TWC guidelines?
It's TWC. That was, for this instance, that was the direction that was issued to the state employees from Austin.
That's a difficult way to run things, but okay.
Yeah, it is.
Mandated, okay.
And we are, it just happened this week. So I'm going to reach out to the state and I want to make sure that they know what that does to us when they make that kind of a decision. Of course, they're trying to protect the state employees. It's a very conservative approach. I'll just put it that way. All right. Christina, would you like to talk about the 2021 board calendar?
You're muted, Christine.
Okay. So this is included in your packet. And you will notice that we do not have a January meeting as usual. That is because we have the local plan due this year on March 1st, and it gets approved by the board. So what we want to do is meet in February with you to be able to bring that local plan and give us time to develop the plan and put it out for comment, for the required comment period. So there's also not a annual awards ceremony included, and that is because of the current situation. Even if we go ahead and have something virtually, it wasn't feasible to have it tied to the board meeting as usual. Usually it's a convenient opportunity since we've already gathered together. So in January, you see that we have committee meetings scheduled, and we also have them in December. If we don't need them in December, we'll probably just delay to January to give us an opportunity to have, we'll cancel the December meetings and delay till January to give us an opportunity to have committee meetings as close to the board meeting as possible. It just depends what business needs we have. And as usual, sometimes, we schedule our committee meetings, and if we don't have an action item, we won't request that you have a meeting. After that, it gets pretty standard, we get back onto our regular schedule. And so we'll have a February meeting and then we'll have one in March. Again, it's on the books just in case we need it. But you will have 2 months where you have back-to-back meetings. We will definitely have the February meeting, and that will be the joint meeting with the CEOs. So that February meeting is scheduled for a Wednesday, just like we typically do our January meeting on a Wednesday to accommodate our CEOs. There are question marks there. We don't know when the NOB conference will be. So that wasn't included there. And we also don't know yet about the TWC conference later in 2021.
All righty. Any questions?
The only question I've got comes to mind is, when do you anticipate having the local plan out in draft form for review?
Oh, Roger, you asked me a good one. So we have a schedule that we have created within our unit, but we've been focused currently on the Quality Texas application. So I'm not sure we will meet that time. Like, can I get back to you with a specific date? I will definitely inform all of the board members that it's out so that you have an opportunity to review it.
Yeah, and I'm just kind of thinking, I can't see the top of the schedule for January, but after the local plan is in draft form, I'm assuming it will flow through the strategic leadership. And I don't know if the normal 1 week prior to the board meeting, executive committee meeting, is how
enough
we
want. Time.
Yeah. So just kind of FYI, I'm kind of wondering, I'd like to get Kenny's input as far as time frame and how he would like to handle that. We don't need to address that right now, but I do think we should be looking at review of that as soon as draft is available, preferably during late January, early February.
Okay. Late January, early February.
I know how comprehensive that plan is, so I don't want to minimize the amount of time it's going to take for you to get a draft. I also don't want to back us in a corner presenting it to the executive committee and the board.
Okay. I will be in touch to make sure that our timeline aligns and see what tweaks need to be made with the requirements that we have relating to it.
But, okay.
I've taken your note.
Very good. Any other comments, discussion on the executive director's report consisting of the COVID-19 update and the board calendar? Okay, hearing none, we have no need for an executive session. Under other business, anybody have anything they want to bring up to the board under other business or future agenda items?
Roger, this is Kenny again. I didn't push my talk button quick enough on the calendar. Christina, you mentioned that we're not going to do the annual meeting. If we were to do that, what month would it be, or what week would it be?
When you say the annual meeting, you say the joint meeting with the CEO?
No, our annual
awards ceremony?
Right.
We have not scheduled that. We're thinking it will likely be a virtual event, but we have not put a date on the books yet. Usually what drives that date is the board meeting.
Yeah, so that was my question. When is it typically? What week of what month?
It's typically in January following the January board meeting, which is on a Wednesday. So this year, if we had done it, it would have been on that Wednesday following our typical Tuesday meeting. Am I answering your question?
Yeah. So is the last week in February, then the 24th, is that a potential date to do that, or Is there dates that are being considered? And the only reason I'm asking is it's for the board's sake to know when this is so that we can get it on calendars. It would be helpful. And just to leave it undecided and to wait to plug it in might be difficult for everybody. So we don't have to resolve it now, but I would suggest coming up with a date because that is something that's really good to participate in and to celebrate with the award portion of that. So just a suggestion.
Okay. We're thinking through the format and, you know, being virtual, how long it should be, and exactly what will be on the agenda. It might look a little differently. TWC is having their employer awards on December 9th. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do. As you're aware, those are usually presented at the TWC conference, which was canceled this year. So I really want to see how they operate that awards presentation and see what ideas we can gather from that as well.
Okay, very good. Any other discussion on that point?
While we're talking about awards, I would just like to remind the board, I sent something out on it, but our small employer of the year nominee, which is Computer Crushers out of Denton, is one of the three finalists for the statewide award. And remember, we won the big employer last year with Stanley Black & Decker. So we're excited about having our small employer of the year in that final three.
Excellent. Okay, anything else under other business? All right, we're going to wrap things up here. If anybody has anything, jump in or wave your hand. I noticed earlier that we had Mayor Falconer from City of Carrollton and Judge Compos from Erath County on the call. We appreciate you guys attending. Is there any other elected officials that jumped in? Okay. Again, thank you to our chief elected officials for participating. Thanks staff for everything you guys do day in and day out, especially during this period of time. Thank everybody for attending and your participation. Stay safe and have a happy Thanksgiving and holiday season. And with that, I'll call for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Carries. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you, too. Have a good one.
Take care.